Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Matthew with the eight woes. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. The Lord was having a final, conclusive confrontation with the corrupt religious leaders of Israel in Jerusalem. He was about to pronounce eight woes against the terrible hypocrisy of the liars and deceivers, the scribes and Pharisees. And we're on Matthew chapter 23 and verse 13. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. For you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. Now, as we said, the word woe here is the Greek "uai," sounding rather like wailing. O-U-A-I is how you spell it. It means woe. And the Lord gives eight woes. And we discussed the fact that these correspond to the eight Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. And as we go through each of these eight woes, we will compare and contrast those to the Beatitudes as we go through the list of woes. So he speaks of the fact that these scribes and Pharisees are hypocrites. They're actors, pretenders, pretending to play a part that's not really true of them. For they shut up the kingdom of the heavens against men. They would refuse to go in themselves, and they don't allow those who are entering to go in. Now, entering and go in are the same word, and occurs three times in the Greek. Now, this is verse 13 in the New King James Version. However, the modern Greek texts have verses 13 and 14 transposed, so that 14 is first and then 13. And some modern texts skip verse 14 altogether. However, neither one of these alterations is correct. For as we have pointed out, and as is suggested by Dr. Bullinger in his Companion Bible, there are eight woes here that correspond to the eight Beatitudes of chapter 5. Verse 13 corresponds to the first Beatitude in Matthew 5, and verse 14 to the second. So to transpose them is simply an error. And this is an error of the modern texts. Now, if we would contrast verse 13 to the first of the Beatitudes, which in Matthew 5:3 was, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of the heavens." Well, the fact is that these men, the scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, were anything but poor in their spirit. Now, the spirit in the Bible has to do with your mind, your thoughts, your opinions, your values, and so forth. What you think, what you truly think, and what your opinion truly is. That's what goes on in your spirit. Now, these men were often of the rich, wealthy class that were the elites in Israel. And yet one could be of that rich, wealthy class and yet be poor in spirit and mindset. Not be proud. Not be arrogant. Not be self-seeking. But to be humble and lowly and poor in spirit even while rich in reality. And so when the Lord says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," that's all who are poor in their mindset, whether or not they're poor in reality. And the kingdom of the heavens belongs to such as these. And yet these scribes and Pharisees were very proud in spirit. And in their pride, they would not enter the kingdom and receive its good, whereas the poor in spirit would enter. So there you have that contrast with the first of these woes and the first of the Beatitudes. Back Matthew 23, verse 14. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. Therefore you will receive greater condemnation." So here woe again is why? And he says woe again to the scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. And again, this means actors or pretenders. An actor is someone who pretends that he's in love with someone when he isn't, that he's sick when he's perfectly well, that he's dying when he's not dying at all, that he has friends when really they aren't his friends, and so on. That's an actor, a pretender. Now, it's one thing when you do it to tell a story, like in a play or movie or something. It's another when you do it in your real life, when you pretend to be something you're not. And that's what these Pharisees and scribes were doing. Now, he says, they devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. Now, a pretense means a show, a cloak, or an act. And so he calls them actors and says, this is how you act. Now, the thing he condemns here is a thing that was notorious in Israel. And there is record after record of it. It was a thing that was both condemned and practiced, widely practiced, as so many things are today. For example, alcohol. The use of alcohol is condemned and condemned, and yet it's almost universally practiced. And it was the same way with this, and that is that the rich would loan money to a widow in need. And they would claim great credit for having done this. Oh, look how I helped this poor widow. Look how I loaned her money. What a good person I am. Yet they did it at exorbitant interest, or really any interest at all would be exorbitant. I mean, for this poor widow, there was no way she could pay. Remember about widows in Israel. As I've told you before, in Israel, you almost had to be part of a family business in order to get by. And the family business had to be led by a patriarch. So a widow who had no son to take over the family business, and yet who couldn't move back in with her father and her father's family business, she was destitute. She had no means of income. So if you gave her a loan, there's no way she could pay back the loan, not to mention any interest. So after taking great credit for having loaned money to this poor widow and taking care of her that way, yet they knew she could never pay. And therefore, they could devour her land. So he says, devour widows' houses, devour their land and their houses for non-payment. Now, these Pharisees and scribes, when they did this, they always remained in the background. Though they sent their agents to put the poor widow out and to possess her home, they would act like they weren't connected with them. So when the officers came to foreclose on her property and put her out, they would come along as if they had no connection to it. And they would see this and they would say, oh, such a shame. And they would wipe some big alligator tears out of their eyes. And they would say, you know what we need to do? You know what we should do for this poor widow woman who's being put out of her home? Why, we should go down to the synagogue. Or we should go down to the temple and we should offer a prayer for this poor widow woman who's being put out of her home. And then they would gather up their long robes and they would hurry off to the temple to offer prayers to this for this woman, when really, it was their own agents who were putting her out. Now, the people would see this act and would say, oh, what good men these scribes and Pharisees are. What good men. And that's what these hypocrites did. And yet the Lord says, because they did this, they will receive greater condemnation. That means much more or more abundant. Now, they receive praise from human beings who are taken in by their hypocritical actions. But God saw the reality, and they would receive greater condemnation. Now, condemnation here is really judgment in Greek. The Greek word is krima. And yet, in this case, as I've told you, judgment has to do with determining what's right and setting things right. And in this case, what would be right for these men is condemnation. Now, they earned condemnation just by the fact that instead of taking care of the poor widows in Israel, like God had demanded the leaders of his people do, they loaned money to them rather than just giving it to them. And then when they couldn't pay it back, they put them out of their houses. Now, that would have earned them condemnation right there. But then for them to hypocritically pray for these widows that they were putting out in order to be praised by other people, why, this would just earn them even greater condemnation in God's sight. Now, we can contrast this second woe with a second beatitude, which in Matthew 5:4 is, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Now, these men pretended to mourn over the impoverishment of the widow, over her being put out of her home. But in reality, their mourning was only an act because, in reality, it was only a pretense to cover the fact that they were the ones putting her out. Now, these widows were the ones who truly mourned, and they would be comforted, like the Lord said. And yet these Pharisees, whose mourning was only a show, they would be condemned. So you see how this second woe corresponds with the second beatitude. Verse 15, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you travel land and sea to win one proselyte, and when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves." So again, this is woe. Why woe on the scribes and Pharisees, these hypocrites, actors, pretenders? For they would travel land and sea. And land there is literally dry in Greek. That's not the way we would usually put it, dry and sea, or sea and dry. But it was common enough in Greek. And of course, it's understandable, even if it's not our common way of saying it. So they would cover sea and dry in seeking to make a proselyte. Now, this is the first of four times this word proselyte occurs in the New Testament. It occurs here as the first time. Then it speaks of those who are proselytes who are at Jerusalem for the Feast of Pentecost in Acts 2 and verse 10. Then one of the seven were chosen to be in charge of the distribution to the poor widows in Jerusalem was Nicholas, a proselyte, in Acts 6 and verse 5. And finally, after Paul gave his speech in the synagogue in Pisidian Antioch, Jews and proselytes followed him in Acts 13 and verse 43. Now, the word proselyte meant a comer over to or a convert. Now, typically, this word was used to refer to Gentiles who had gone so far in attaching themselves to the Jewish religion that they had actually circumcised themselves. And so they had joined the religion God gave to Israel as Jews. Even though they weren't Jews, they were Gentiles. However, in this case, I don't believe that's what it means. In this case, I believe it means a Jew whom the Pharisees had converted and caused them to come over to their strict sect of the Pharisees. You see, I don't believe that these scribes and Pharisees were concerned about converting Gentiles to become Jews. No, they were far more concerned about converting, especially wealthy, powerful Jews, and converting them to become Pharisees. So they would cover sea and dry to make one proselyte to their way of Pharisaism. And yet, what would they do with this one they had now made a Pharisee? Well, they would make him into twice as much a son of hell as they themselves. Now, son here is the Greek word huios, H-U-I-O-S. And it's the word we translate it son in English, but it really meant not exactly what our English word son means. And we don't really have a word that corresponds exactly, but it meant one who represented the character of another. So after converting these to the Pharisee way, they would make them twice as much someone who had the character of someone who would be condemned to hell as they themselves. Now, what about hell here? What's hell? Well, hell is a translation of the Greek word Gehenna. And Gehenna refers to a valley near Jerusalem. And it is originally called in the Old Testament the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom. Now, Gehinnom, G-E-H-I-N-N-O-M, in Hebrew means Valley of Hinnom. And yet in Greek, where of course Ge doesn't mean valley, it was shortened to Gehenna in Greek. Now this was a very beautiful valley, very near and convenient to the capital city of Jerusalem. And so the idolatrous Jerusalemites chose this beautiful valley to carry out their idol worship. And in the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom, they practiced the horrifying practice of passing their sons and daughters through the fire to the god Molech. However, there came a time when King Josiah defiled this valley. He took the priests of Molech, burned their bodies on their own altars, and scattered their ashes all over the valley. Now, the Israelites might not have clung to God's law very tightly, but one part of it did impress them. And that was the idea that you needed to be clean, ceremonially clean, in order to worship. And being ceremonially clean meant not touching any part of a dead body. However, once you had spread ashes of dead humans all over a valley, why, you couldn't go into that valley without possibly contacting some of those ashes and defiling yourself, and so you couldn't worship. And so this absolutely spoiled the valley for idolatrous worship in the minds of the Israelites from then on. Now, this valley, though it was spoiled for idolatrous worship, it was still very convenient to Jerusalem. And so these practical people converted it into the Jerusalem city garbage dump. Now, of course, it's also nice to have your garbage dump convenient to your city. And so this was very convenient. Now, not only did they dispose of garbage there, but Gehenna also became the proper disposal place for, after execution, the bodies of particularly wicked criminals. Now, they would express it that these criminals, in their minds, were just trash. Just trash. And so their bodies would be ignominiously cast into the trash heaps of Gehenna after their executions. So what the Lord is saying here is that the people might have thought of these Pharisees and scribes as their elite, as the high and mighty. But God looked at them very differently. He looked at them as the lowest of the low. Criminals so vile they didn't deserve to have their bodies buried, but just to be thrown on the garbage heap as trash. And so the Lord tells them, your missionary efforts to go out and make converts to your Pharisee way just makes those you convince worse and more sons of Gehenna and not better. Now, if we contrast this with the third beatitude, in Matthew 5:5, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Now, these men were willing to cover the earth, go far and wide to make converts. And yet they were far from meek. That is, they were far from submissive to God. And so they were not going to inherit the earth. They were only going to inherit Gehenna, ignominious death and destruction. Verse 16, the fourth woe. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform it. Well, this time he doesn't say, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. He says, woe to you, blind guides. And by calling them guides, he meant that they were the leaders or the teachers of the people, and therefore were supposed to be their guides. Now, they said this, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. Now, temple there is not the word hieron, which means the temple grounds, but it's the word naos, which means that main building, the holy place, the holy of holies, in the center of the temple grounds. So they said, if you swear by the temple, that's nothing. Ah, but if he swears by the gold of the temple, then he's obliged. That means he's obligated. He owes what he swore. Now, the incredible craft and deceit of the Pharisees comes out here. They might impress and fool one by saying, oh yes, I'll do it. I swear by the temple. I swear by the temple. But then, when the time came, they didn't perform what they swore. And if they were called on it, they would say, oh, well, I just swore by the temple. And an oath by the temple, that means nothing. Now, if I had sworn by the gold of the temple, or this could mean by the golden ornaments, the golden vessels in the temple, why, then that would have meant something if I had sworn by the gold of the temple. But I just swore by the temple, so that didn't mean anything. What hypocrisy! If swearing by the temple meant nothing, then why did they do it? They proved themselves by this to be liars. And this was no better than those who excused their lying by saying, oh, it's okay. I might have lied, but I did it with my fingers crossed. Verse 17. fools and blind. For which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? He calls them fools and blind, and fools in Greek is moros, from which we get our word moron. So the Lord's basically calling them blind morons here. And the Lord was wasting no words, and he in no way soft-pedaled his condemnation of these godless men. So he says, which is more important, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? Now, sanctified is hagiadzo, which means to separate or to make holy. Now ask yourself, is gold holy? Is the gold in an idol temple holy? Is the gold out in the marketplace being exchanged from hand to hand as commerce, is that holy? No, gold isn't holy. And it's obvious that the golden articles in the temple are made holy by the fact that they're in the temple. It's the temple that makes the golden vessels holy. And those vessels are not holy in and of themselves. Verse 18, and whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gift that is on it, he is obliged to perform it. So again here, they said, I just swore by the altar, and that's nothing. Now the altar is used both for the altar of sacrifice, the bronze altar out in front of the temple, and also for the golden altar of incense within the holy place. In this case, it probably means the altar of sacrifice because it speaks of the gift on it. Well, if the altar of sacrifice was nothing, then why did they swear by it? Why do they say, I swear by the altar, if swearing by the altar meant nothing? And again, this was just a way of tricking people. Now, a gift can and often does refer to the gifts that are made as offerings or sacrifices to God. And again, this was a way of fooling people and of not actually paying debts that they swore they would pay. Verse 19, fools and blind. For which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Well, again, he calls them fools and blind, blind morons. Well, of course, the gift was not the important thing. There were many Gentiles who offered gifts of the very same animals to their idols. Were those gifts holy? Of course not. They were unholy. It isn't the gift that sanctifies the altar. It's the altar that sanctifies the gift. This should be totally obvious. And how ridiculous that anyone could miss it. Verse 21. He who swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. Now, temple here is again naos, the central building, not the temple grounds. And he who dwells in the temple is obviously a reference to God. God is spoken of as inhabiting the temple, since he chose the temple as his own and placed his name, his reputation upon it. This is the typical word for making your home in a place. And God who's everywhere, the God who created the universe, actually stooped to call a place on earth his dwelling. To swear by this temple, this place then, far from being nothing compared to swearing by the gold of the temple, is actually far more. To swear by the temple is to swear by God himself. Again, completely obvious. How could anyone possibly miss it? So in this portion, the Lord condemned the scribes and Pharisees for their acting, which hid their true, selfish, corrupt motivations. He condemned their shutting up the kingdom against people, their devouring widows' houses while praying for them. They're traveling sea and land to make proselytes to their ways and then corrupting their characters even worse than theirs were. And their hypocritical rules regarding swearing. Next time, we'll go on to see the last four woes he brought against these hypocritical men. Well, let's be careful that we never act like they did.
When contrasting the eight woes directed at the Pharisees with the eight Beatitudes, the character traits of arrogant and hypocritical men identify them worthy of condemnation. Conversely, the character traits of Christ's humble and submissive disciples mark them out as worthy of the inheritance of God's promises. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the eight woes. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Matthew with Acts of the Hypocrites. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you know God's Word more, you know God more. For more information on the program and to hear past programs or other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also send out a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on this mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although we always appreciate your financial support, you will never be solicited for funds in any way when you write to us, so feel free to contact us. This program has been brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say so long for now, but we always look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.